Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Tennis Channel Inside In on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Mitch Michaels from the Santa Monica studio. The official tour season is over. We still got some Davis Cup action. If you're watching or listening to this after Thanksgiving, hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. Joined now by former tour professional, top 20 player, commentator for TC in town this week for the Davis Cup, friend of the show, Jan Michael Gamble. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mitch. Good to be here.
It's been an interesting journey, I'd say this. You know, the longest season that there is in sports. There's been ups and downs, a lot of new faces. I did want to start with this, though. Last time you were on the show with our good buddy Leif Shiras, you kind of hit the nail on the head with Coco Gauff and the forehand issues that she had working with Brad Gilbert, and then goes on and wins the U.S. Open a month later. So we got to congratulate people that get predictions right on the show.
Yeah, I remember saying that was a good hire, and it certainly was. She did it pretty much everything that she could have done to have the best year of her career, and she has fixed that forehand.
It's insane.
She made it into a non-issue. Just making better choices on it, and again, Brad was the right person to put in there.
What I think is very special is, I mean, that moment was iconic for tennis, and it was just a tremendous thing to see. If she doesn't win another major, she still has that U.S. Open. The only problem she has now is ego. Like, she's got an ego problem, and that's every player. And the head-to-head's not great. Ego locked back in, which we all thought she would, won the next two head-to-heads. That's the problem. It's figuring out, you know, you can beat pretty much everybody else. It's how do you beat this person consistently.
And that makes it fun, though, right? Yeah. It wouldn't be fun without adversity. So finding a way around that tomahawk of a forehand that Iga possesses is going to be the trick. And Iga played some very confident tennis, as you mentioned, at the end of the year. It's going to be really interesting to see who starts out in Australia.
Yeah.
On the right foot.
I was stunned how quickly it happened that Iga got back on track and got number one. I thought it would happen, but I'll say that fast was stunning.
I mean, the way she played against Pegula in that final, it was just like, all right, that's just absolutely lights out tennis. That's makes me think of like Steffi Graf in the past, just going out and crushing someone in the final. That is not easy to do against Pegula, as one of the most consistent and solid players out there.
Yeah, it was a crazy end of the women's year. The men's season was the same. We did have the top four. I mean, there's the same alpha, which we'll get to. But I will say this, though. It was interesting to see the top four players all get to the semis. Now, we're going to get into the results, but hasn't happened much. We got a final four that were the four best players of the year, Djokovic, Alcaraz, Medvedev, and Sinner. So I know there's a guy in a tier all by his own and some other contenders, but the top four separating themselves from the field was nice to see.
Yeah, it seems to be happening. I like how Jannik Sinner has really upped his level. He seems to level up a little bit each year. Mm-hmm. Now, four in the world, is that right? Where he's ended up at the end of the year, and loved how he played in that final, was outclassed in the actual final against Novak, who adapted his game as he often does. But the fact that he was there and they had so much viewers, there's so much interest behind Jannik Sinner. I'm a fan. Yeah. There's a lot of fans out there, and that's really good for our sport.
What I thought before we get to Djokovic was fascinating, and Jim Courier brought this up last week, is that with the exception of Medvedev, who just played every match, it seemed, the other three guys did manage their schedules pretty well, and they had dips. Alcaraz had the injury stuff, had some issues there. Sinner had some fatigue stuff. Djokovic, obviously, at his stage in the career. But we saw three out of the four players who are going to play their schedule, count on themselves to get the results when they lock in. And that might be a different way going forward. We'll have to see. But I think the days of maybe playing every single tournament might be few and far between.
I think the days, well, not for Medvedev. I think
not
he's just going to keep playing. So far he's remained pretty much injury free and just loves playing tennis. I mean, he's built like Gumby. I don't know if he can be injured, actually.
Over 80 matches this year.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable. Sinner has some issues. He's defaulted often throughout years. He's had defaults here and there, whether it's fatigue, which was totally warranted, by the way, and ridiculous, that scheduling.
Yeah, I don't want to get my conspiracy theory guards up because that was absurd, right? Like, you finish after three, which is a whole nother issue. A whole nother issue with scheduling events and when you, how many matches you try to fit in, how late you go. If the tournaments go late and that's what their vibe is, okay?
You got a tournament in Paris that has a wonderful stadium and then two kind of strange outside courts. Courts I never really liked to play on. And unfortunately, in Paris, I didn't play all that well, so I was playing on those courts a lot. So I get why they're trying to keep most of the tennis on that stadium.
Right.
They just got behind.
They did.
It happens, but they shouldn't then turn around and make the guy play that early.
It was day session, technically. Like, it wasn't even a night session. So he, you know, he withdraws from that, comes in locked into the ATP finals and gets all the way there, but runs into, you know, Novak Djokovic again at 36, wins his seventh ATP finals title, extending a record there. It's something to see, right? It's something to behold a guy not just winning at his age, but doing it in different ways, widening the margins in a lot of way. And Jan Michael, he gets better at areas. Like, there isn't slippage. If there is, he's doing a great job covering it up. What I saw in the Alcaraz match and what I saw in the Sinner match was a guy that can weather any storm out of the gates. He trusts that he's going to wear you down because he's smarter, he's fitter, and he's been in bigger, big match moments than anyone in the history of the sport.
The guy just never seems to panic, too, in any given rally. Even if he will run these shots down, and of course, these crazy maneuvers. He does the splits. He's recovering. Then sometimes the guy, his opponent, even hits a winner or wins the point. And Novak gives a little clap and shrugs it off and does it again. And that's just overwhelming over the course of a match. And his shot-making skills are second to nobody. It's just unbelievable. He made that Alcaraz the in quote match that everybody was looking forward to a non-routine match. Now, with that being said, like you mentioned, Carlitos has been injured. He's had issues in the last few months. And so I don't think he's had his best. I don't think he's at his most confident right now. I don't know if when he walked on the court, he thought he was going to beat Novak that day. It didn't look like it. Now everybody's going to have some time to sort of recoup. Hopefully get away from the game a little bit. Don't play too many exhibitions. I know there's a lot of money out there in those exhibitions.
Yeah,
you got to be careful because going into Australia, who's going to be the best player? And right now it's obviously Novak. So who can give him some trouble?
Yeah, quick note on that exhibition comment last year, and he said it himself. I'm not just inferring anything. Casper Ruud messed up the whole start of his season by playing with Rafa in all those exhibitions. So
how do you turn that down?
Yeah.
How do you turn down an opportunity to play with Rafa all over the world?
There's a big one around Christmas coming up, and we've seen the entry list, so some players already committed to that. I understand that financially, too.
It's tough.
The thing with Djokovic, though, it's you get to athletes at this stage in the game and you think, okay, like their mind's sharper than ever. Maybe they're losing some fitness. Maybe they can figure out a way to cover up some deficiencies. He's not doing any of that. He's playing better.
What would you say, Mitch?
If anything, no, but like the serve and forehand got better this year. We can honestly say that, which is crazy.
They look excellent. The thing that he does is he continue to give himself that which makes him tougher, whether it's the crowd against him or somebody in his box or his opponent or just that he's unhappy with the way he's playing. He finds a way to light that, which seems to be an eternal flame in his body, to rise to the occasion, to get better on the year, to keep winning these tournaments. He's in the finals of all the slams this year.
I mean, how do you stay motivated one match away, maybe one point away if that Alcaraz, you know, swinging forehand goes differently.
Crazy.
How do you stay motivated at 36, 400 weeks now at number one, has every record except for tournament titles. He's like 11 away from Connors, doesn't have the gold medal. That's pretty much it. He's done everything there is to do in this sport. And it reminded me of that last go, you know, the last dance go that Michael Jordan had for the Bulls, because he is basically tennis's version of Michael Jordan. He's done everything. He's become not just one of the greats, he's become the great. He's become the guy in the history of the game.
Well, if you're just looking at the stats, I don't think there's no longer an argument. And unfortunately, Rafa's not out there. We hope to see Rafa soon. You know, he's still going to be tough on the clay. Who knows what he can do on the hard to keep the body together. But Novak's going to be the man to beat. Roger's retired, so those records that he put forth aren't going to catch up to Novak's. If you're just looking at the records, maybe Novak wants to also be more beloved in the future. You know, when the stakes are a little bit more against him, when he's having to like really dig in to win some of these matches.
When he starts slipping, whenever that will be.
Maybe he's after Connor's record. Maybe he's not telling us a few things that he simply wants all the records. And I don't have a problem with it.
I don't either. I mean, it's these guys are tortured geniuses at what they do, and it's a reason why they've gotten so good in addition to the skill. It's the motivation to keep going. And the fact that he's able to find a level where you could say, you know, even in the Holger match, wins in three, not his best, which is obviously a high level either way. Sinner, he loses, could have played better, third set tiebreak. But there it is again. Get him into the semis, get him into the final, and he'll raise the stakes, raise the level when it matters most. It's just the most remarkable thing among remarkable things.
Absolutely.
We're looking at it from another perspective too, though, because I think we're in the same boat. You obviously being out there, you know that Sinner was not going to roll over and try to shut Djokovic out in that Holger match.
Is that that's even in the conversation.
It's not even about money to me or anybody else, right? Like, obviously these guys make enough money. The money wasn't why he did it. He's a competitor. He wants to win every match he plays. There is also, he's never beaten Holger Rune before, and I don't think they're the best of friends. That's a big thing for a guy your era. You don't want to let him get another victory over you.
You don't just roll over and you lose a match just so you can get, you know, take out Novak there. I mean, in theory, it might have been a good strategy, but down the road, that's not a good look. It's not a good look in the locker room. It's not a good look going forward as a competitive athlete to not give your all when you walk on the court. And I've never seen Jannik Sinner do that. I've seen him default when he can't give his all. But I've never seen him not give his 100%.
I mean, these are prideful guys that have gotten to where they got by, and the women too, obviously, by putting forth every effort. So you're not going to start rolling over now. And I do think he wanted to beat Holger. That was a great match. I mean, Holger
got there. I
read that
on Twitter. I was like, are you kidding me? This? I was like, No,
never.
Absolutely not.
That was a great match. Holger's not too far off, too. Just a quick note on him. I mean, for him to bounce back, get help from Becker, also get healthy, probably more important. And he shows you with his moxie out there. He's another guy that will lose a set 6-1, 6-2, but he'll be right in the match.
Absolutely. I saw Becker in there. I thought, well, you know what? That's also a pretty good hire. Becker's got a lot of knowledge, and he's been through a lot.
Yeah, Holger's great for the game, and he's great for the fact that we have another type of player and type of character, I think is good. And I do think there's some things to work on, but it would not shock me if he's, you know, Rublev made his fourth straight. Feels like Holger's going to be here for a lot of consecutive years if the body holds up.
I think so, and there's some similarities. Holger can hurt his opponents with the big shots that he's, big ground strikes, big forehand, much like Sinner. So that's why they give a player like Djokovic a little bit of trouble, can surprise him and hit some big shots and really kind of hurt him, make him play more defense than he'd like to. He doesn't mind playing the defense, obviously, but that's a type of a mindset and a game style that can hurt him a little bit.
Yeah, he had two Djokovic matches, Paris and the finals, that were like the exact same. Great. Exactly. Third set, kind of worn down by a 36-year-old. It's the craziest thing.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
More with Jan Michael Gamble here on Tennis Channel Inside. And I did want to mention Sinner because the final will leave a bad taste in his mouth. But, you know, was 4-0 going into that. Four wins against the very best players in the world. Won the group stage. Was able to also handle the expectations of playing at home in front of fans, which we know can't be easy. This was a real breakthrough for him. I know he's going to, you know, take a couple days to decompress, but a huge breakthrough, how he played, how he handled expectations. Sky is the limit for Sinner. He's 4, and I don't think he's settled at that number.
Yeah, I think he's been one of the most exciting players to watch on tour for a while. And again, I'll bring it up, is he's had some little issues injury-wise and some things that have sort of, I think at times, held him back a little. I think he's figured out a way around most of those. Even again, pulling out of Paris, saying, this doesn't make sense to hurt my body to play this event. I'm more focused on the ATP finals, and look what he did. He made the actual final. I don't think he's going to be too hurting from that, you know, I thought wonderful tournament making the final. You lose to Novak Djokovic, that's not like the end of the world. It's most people are losing to Novak Djokovic. What I like is he's turning around. He's going to play Davis Cup for Italy. He's in Spain. At least he's there. So he's making that effort after that huge result. A lot of players would be like, "Oh, I'm done."
There's something to be said, right? And obviously, Sinner's at the top of the game, but players that have good years and are healthy, they don't want the season to end. Like we talk about how long it is. Like you feel like, I'm in that rhythm. Let's keep playing tennis.
That's very astute. I think that's very true. And you're playing well, you want to keep riding that wave. It feels nice.
Yeah. The big thing, as you mentioned, Sinner, after that Zverev lost the U.S. Open, it was a run of he lost all the long physical matches. He kind of flipped that in the Asian swing and into Paris and into now the ATP Finals. And actually, look, beating Medvedev 3 times in a row, 0-6. That's huge. When you can flip the head-to-head on a guy at that level, I mean, Medvedev's got some real Sinner problems right now.
And those are the kind of tests that's tough for a guy who hits the ball as big as Sinner does. A type of Zverev and Medvedev, very similar types of players, play a lot of good defense. They'll play far back. They'll make you play the long rallies. So you have to have the lungs to go out there against a player like that and really take it to him. And that's a tough one. So if he's sort of getting through that, getting sort of past that, where he struggles with the tough, longer rallies, that's a good sign for Sinner fans.
Yeah, I watched that match, and I saw him show patience in the rally, not go for too much too early, which obviously it's annoying to play Medvedev. But also, he will come to the net, and that's part of the game that he's worked on, to serve and shortening some points when he can. He's been very smart and selective. And we did talk about Medvedev. I will just say, unreal athlete, obviously a huge fan of his sense of humor and everything. That was the first match I thought, wow, he kind of looks tired. Like, that was, dare I say, a little sluggish Medvedev, and maybe that is just 80 matches catching up
it's
to you.
It's 80 matches, man. He isn't taking any time off. If he's not tired, then he's truly a Terminator, which he reminds me of. He's like, you can't put him away.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the ATP media video that they did where they were all playing the game where they held up, you know, like a match game, basically. And it was backhand with your life, depending on it. And Medvedev wasn't going to put himself up. But he's like, oh, it's not a winner. He's like, it's got to be me then. So I've been training my whole life, just getting it over. I think he's great. And I do think that there is a level for him to still get to, because his baseline game, and not just where he plays, but his floor, dare I say, is so rock solid that I think he's going to be in the conversation for all these majors coming up. Maybe not French, but still all the other three, I would say.
He certainly proved last year that he can play much better on the clay.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Winning in Rome, if I'm not wrong. I mean, that's pretty impressive, his turnaround on the clay. I think he's a threat on all surfaces with the big serve, his willingness to, you know, he sort of had the same thing as me, and he's much better on the clay than me, but I always sort of had a bad attitude going to the clay. I didn't like the clay. I didn't enjoy the clay court season very much, and that sort of, I felt for Medvedev a little bit. I was like, okay, maybe this isn't going to be his surface, but he's turned it into pretty much his surface. Maybe not as good as some of the other guys, but he could be a threat.
Does the doubt creep into your mind then, or like maybe you mentally start to check and see yourself like, oh, hard court's coming or grass is coming? Like when you have a couple losses, does that compound a little bit?
Well, the doubt did for me. Yeah, I was like, I'm ready to, let's just get to the grass as soon as possible. Yeah. And, you know, I enjoyed playing the grass. I enjoyed the hard courts a lot. I just didn't move well in the clay. I felt like I had to play such crazy offensive tennis and come forward more than I liked to win matches on the clay. So maybe just adapting his game style a little bit. Probably can't play quite as far back the way that he hits the ball.
Well, on the notion of Medvedev and how outspoken he is at times, we talked about this before, but Alcaraz said something too. Court speed's a huge issue, and people are saying that things are a little different, and you know that court was fast, and there's obviously the balls and stuff. I bring it up to you because your era and even the era before that, it seems like you guys had to adjust to a lot of different elements, and this might be new for the new age players, if that's fair to say.
Great. I hope it. I hope it's tough for them. I think that there should be faster courts. Just covered the Davis Cup match, and the courts look fast there. Mm-hmm. Look fast in Spain right now. So I think that that's a good thing. I think you have to be able to adapt your game to a fast court just like you must to the slow clay. So if court speed's a little bit of an issue and Kalishas didn't like it, well...
I remember that quote Roger Federer had where he, you know, and he came up with a different generation and kind of stuck around a long time. He said, I had to learn how to play a bunch of different styles. The players today don't really have to do that. And I think the ball thing in terms of injury, that's a whole nother topic. We want to make sure these players aren't breaking down.
It's a different issue. Right. I agree with Carlitos 100% on what he said. for the different tours, they should be using the same ball.
Right. And now, this is a very specific pro tennis thing, guys and girls that are playing year round that deal with it, that club players wouldn't even know.
Some balls are just heavier than others, and it's just a whole thing. So if you just say to these tournaments, and the problem is it's a sponsor for these events.
Yeah.
So they're getting money from this ball, the ball sponsor for the tournament, which is important.
Uh-huh.
But if you just make it the tour, which is really a logical thing, especially for such a young player, although he is an ambassador for the sport, but what he said is true.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cause some injuries. That doesn't mean it's the whole ball all year. It just means for these tours, and that can be 3 or 4 tournaments or 5 tournaments in a row, whatever it might be.
Sounds like the players don't even really know what to expect tournament to tournament. Sometimes they're and that's where I think the expectation should be there, even if you have to plan it out knowing what
there
to expect.
There was, for a while, I know that the Wilson U.S. Open ball during the U.S. Open series was the ball. And I thought that was such a great thing. So for all these hardcore tournaments leading up to the U.S. Open, I think that maybe Newport was included in that, you're using the same tennis ball. It's nice. You get sort of used to it. The Australian Open sort of does that same ball for the tournaments over there leading into the Australian Open.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I think we could just get to some, consistency with that is what the players want. And the last thing on the finals is Alcaraz. It was nice to see. And I agree, he didn't have the best confidence body language against Djokovic. But against Medvedev in that round robin match was the first time he looked a little back. Like, this is the guy we remember. And it was a couple months since we saw that version of him.
Match tough is not a made up word. Playing matches, winning matches, and frankly, to be a very top player, that means you're doing it a lot.
Yeah.
So you get an injury that sidelines you a little bit. You maybe didn't have the year that you thought that you were going to have, and surprise, Novak Djokovic has again dominated the tour. I think that's a lot on Alcaraz's plate. That's why I'm really looking forward to next year. I really love watching him play, as many of us do. So it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to still a very, very good year. He was number one for a number of it.
Yeah.
And he's ended up at number two.
Like, I don't think there's much that he needs to really work on in terms of playing tennis. I think match toughness, making sure your body revs up for the big events, which Djokovic struggled with early in his career. I did notice in a couple of the moments in the Zverev match in particular, hearing our own Paul Anacone say that, this is a little bit loose from him. There are points and moments in games where he's not rock solid. And look, can he beat 98% of the tour when he's not even like that? But it's the upper
2%. Well, that's the thing. I think that one of the things that makes Alcaraz so excited to watch is that he takes some risks.
Yeah.
Hits the ball big. He's very kind of a different sort of new age, old age player. Yeah. Like, he plays a little bit like Roger. It's not the same, but a little bit. A very offensive type of a game.
Yeah.
And when you play that way, you still have to make good decisions. To beat Novak Djokovic day in, day out, I'm not sure he'll ever be able to do that, but to beat him on the biggest stage, he's going to have to just be a little bit more consistent.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot more consistent.
Djokovic doesn't seem like he takes as many risks, but he just gets it done. What else can you say? The guy just does it again.
What else you can say?
It's pretty insane. And then we turn on to the final real event of the year, the Davis Cup, going on right now. You called some of the action today. How about Finland knocking out Canada?
Just
defending champs
today.
Out.
You know what? This is what Davis Cup's about. I thought that this match, Virtanen was just incredible in singles and then in the doubles, stepped up with Heliovaara in the doubles, and they got it done against the defending champions. Of course, both teams didn't have their full roster out there, but it's about taking the group that you have and finding a way to inspire them and get you through it.
Yeah.
Of course, this format's pretty brutal. 2 matches and you're done. 2 out of 3, it's over.
Yeah, it's because in your era playing and getting the chance to play for the Davis Cup team, you never had the pressure of, okay, right now, rubber one means way more than it used to.
I mean, there was always the pressure.
Because
if you could do well the first day and put your team in front, then that doubles in the middle could mean even more. There was a lot of – it was different, though. And the 3 out of 5, I think, is tough in its own way. It's longer. You have chances to come back. 2 out of 3 is – it's over quick if you sort of have a lapse in a set. I like the going back and forth, the different countries playing at home and away ties. I think that for me, that was really special about Davis Cup. But I think that this team format is done really well. I loved seeing the full crowds
in the season. Was nice.
The Finns were there in great numbers. Canada had a good support group. This was a great tie. Yeah. It was a great tie. I'm very happy. I love Canada, but I was very happy for Finland because that was, You can see it meant so much to those guys.
Nice to see a Scandinavian country break through in tennis. Amazing. It's a global game. Would you compare the energy and the nervousness, how you felt before a Davis Cup match to like a big Grand Slam match? Was it different? Same vibe?
Oh, I was much more nervous.
Oh.
Because the Grand Slams obviously were quintessential, the most important events for a solo player. But Davis Cup and the opportunity to play for your country, especially when I was going up against the likes of Sampras and Agassi and Courier. Todd Martin and like just trying to get a spot on the team, it meant a lot to have that opportunity, and I was able to get out there a few times, so it was a really neat opportunity for me, and I did feel the pressure,
especially on the road, right? Like maybe that's a little more comfortable when you have the road hustle environment. So a little different for tennis.
Well, I was a little bit like I have a few similarities. I didn't have a problem with Novak a little bit when the crowd was against me. I actually liked it.
Yeah.
That was fine. It could fire me up. It didn't.
It's when you're at home.
I never backed down. I felt more nervous when the crowd was all for me, and I felt like I needed to perform for them. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's much easier to have the crowd against you and you're like,
I'm the only one here. Yeah.
I'll take you on. I don't care. You can't do anything to me anyway.
Nothing better than silence too, right? When you shut up an away crowd.
Exactly. And you shut
them
all up.
And just because of your experience, you mentioned Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer and that guys you were competing with and then played on rosters with. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure seeing them up close and personal, you had to learn a little bit more because it's one thing to be on the tour competing with, seeing them win Grand Slams. When you're right there, front row seat, a teammate, you get to see how these geniuses really do work.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I was lucky enough to practice with Jim Courier, but sort of my transition from juniors onto, well, lower pros to the top pros. And so I knew Jim very well, and I considered him a friend, and he was a lovely mentor to me at times as well. And so was Andre Agassi. So I had some good relationships that I developed, I think, from the Davis Cup, from just practicing. They respected me because they knew that I put it all into the practice every single time I walked on the court. So that was a really nice, it just worked out. We all did that. We all hated losing practice sets, practice baseline games. There's brackets flying all over the place and being broken. But, those practice weeks and having a meal with these players, these legends of the sport and people that I looked up to, was a huge thing for me in my career.
It's got to be one of those moments you cherish in your career, especially just, saying you were on the Davis Cup team, a contemporary with some of these legends. Speaking of that, I mean, we've got Joker and Sinner both competing, and it does show you how much it means to them, how much, in a long tennis season, as we reiterated, and everything you have to do and sponsorship requirements, you just can't beat national pride in a lot of ways.
No, they both care about their countries. Novak cares about Serbia. He wants to win the Davis Cup for Serbia. I think it's going to be interesting to watch that one. I think it's going to be tough. I don't think they have a great doubles team in that lineup. I think that they have a bunch of great singles players that they could put in there. Obviously Novak at the major forefront of that, but even if that's a gimme, they still have to win the other singles match and figure out a way to win the doubles. So that's what makes this interesting.
He gets very emotional every time he has a homecoming back in Serbia. It means a lot to him. And if we get Sinner Djokovic again, that'd be pretty cool. So we'll see.
Be pretty cool.
A couple of things just to wrap up here at Jan Michael Gamble on Tennis Channel Insight. And I have to give a shout out too, and he surprised me, and I'm sure you. Nick Kyrgios did pretty well on commentary this past week.
I don't think that surprised me all that much. Okay. I think he has a lot of good opinions, and having an opinion and backing it up and saying something that strategically that brings the viewers in. I think he's very good at that. Nick doesn't want to let people into his head very much. So I thought that was a really neat opportunity to get into the head of Nick Kyrgios.
I think I'd say more surprised how good he was calling matches. I thought he'd be good on TC Live because he has opinions, as you said, but it made me think of something Riley Opelka told me earlier this year, that when you're a peer, when you're on tour, that's your time to really shine in that booth. Because you know these guys, you've played them, you can offer insight that even former greats, former legends don't have. This is, and that's what he was doing when Zverev and Medvedev and Djokovic were playing. He could take you into what it's like to be on the other side of that serve.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting, and it's great for the viewers. It's great for Tennis Channel to have him in there, and he's an interesting personality. Why wouldn't we not want to have him? It's fantastic.
He did ask, though, his friends and him asked, what's the deal with this Thanksgiving iPhone update alert? What's Thanksgiving?
He didn't know what that was.
He asked. I think it was a serious question.
Oh, fair enough.
Because the iPhone geotag had the holiday in there, so he's like, "What's this Thanksgiving?" I keep hearing about.
Well, he doesn't have. He's an Australian. He didn't have to know.
Yeah, so that's fair to say. Well, it is the off season time for some. The training blocks have already started. And why, I guess the final question, why is the Maldives like the place? Has it become a tennis destination? Was it for you? It seems like that's where everybody goes now.
Is that
now.
The thing? Is
that's
that
where they go. It's the photos in the Maldives for a couple of days.
Oh, good for them. That's far away from my place in Hawaii, which is home. Okay. So yeah, I didn't need to go to the Maldives to be happy.
It just seems like that's maybe mostly the European players. Yeah. You know, and
for Europe, it's probably much easier to get there. Or the Caribbean, certainly easier than going to all the way to Hawaii.
The money's gotten nice, so it's nice to see. It's like the pay's gone up. But we'll see. I think Serbia, Italy, Davis Cup, if we get that semi, that can, you know, put a nice bow on this year, and we'll see what we get done. But Jan Michael Gamble, this was fun. Thanks for coming on the show, not just this time, but, you know, the several times this year talking tennis. Always a pleasure. That was Jan Michael Gamble. This was Tennis Channel Inside In. We're on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Just go to tennis.com/podcast. Also go to Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, and check out the episodes on YouTube as well. You can subscribe and get every episode downloaded automatically into your phone or listening device as well. We're back next week. We're into December. Some cool off-season content planned for you on this show. For Jan Michael Gamble, I'm Mitch Michaels. Thanks for listening. Have a great and happy Thanksgiving, and I'll talk to you next week.